Hi, welcome. Today we're going to talk to Adam Roach, who is the creator of such podcasts as Attaboy Clarence, Secret History of Hollywood. We just have a couple of questions for him today, and we are going to jump right into that. My name is Lily, and I co-coordinate Reel to Reel Classics, and I think we'll have a good time today. So first, I want to start with, how would you describe the differences between your main two podcasts to a new listener, Attaboy Clarence and Secret History of Hollywood?
Well, Secret History of Hollywood is very much a biopic series. So I'd like to tell life stories. So it's as long as they need to be. They're very, very long, very involved. And I get to go off on as many tangents as I want. But it's basically like watching a film about a person in your head. So that's the difference. Attaboy Clarence is just me talking about stuff I like. It's me. So it's, you know, slightly less coordinated and organized than this meeting. And I always include radio, and I just talk about the films that I've seen that week and dig. And then I pretend to do impressions of my dog. And I listen to music on it and stuff. It's just like sitting on a couch in my head. So yeah, it's not as organized as Secret History of Hollywood, but that's the main difference. One's serious and one isn't.
Yeah, I think there's definitely humor in Attaboy Clarence, and there's gravity, and you're really going through an audio journey with Secret History, but I think they complement different sides of what you might want from a podcast. So I think that's not a bad thing.
No, well, the Secret History of Hollywood episodes take so long to make that when I come back and do a load of Attaboy Clarence episodes in between, I always say it's like a palate cleanser, because it's almost like, oh, I can stop, you know, emoting for 5 minutes and just have a drink and have some fun. So yeah, I don't possibly think I could do one without the other, if that makes sense. One allows me to be creative and the other allows me to exhale, basically, for a few months.
I think that's good. I definitely relate to that. You have a silly side that's really fun, kind of get it out, have some fun, but then, you know, you have a serious presentation or you have a research project. So I think a lot of students would probably also relate to that. It's good to kind of be lighthearted with something, but we do like the impressions of your dog. So that's really great. We like the side characters.
She doesn't. She's no. And the weird thing is I've done it so long now that she'll come into the kitchen, you know, when I'm cooking or something, or just come up to me on the sofa. And I hold entire conversations with her with that voice. And just, you know, someone from the household would just, you know, suddenly lean into shot and go, okay, am I doing it out loud? I'm so sorry.
Hey, it's totally fine to talk to your pet. They they're talking,
but
not to
talk back in their voice to yourself.
Yeah, don't. Maybe that's a little bit like, you know, bullying or taunting. No, it's very endearing. I think the lightheartedness is also something that people kind of want these days, is a little, so I think you're doing a great service there. It's great to hear that you enjoy doing both, because I'm sure people who gravitate towards one or the other might be like, oh my gosh, are you going to stop doing these? Are you going to stop doing those? So it's awesome to have two sides of that coin. And I really love them for sure. Definitely favorite podcast. So I can't pick one or the other, even though they're like totally different, because sometimes I'm like, you know, I might be washing my dishes and like giggling to myself. That also is fun to walk into when they're like, what is wrong? But then sometimes with the Secret History, I have to stop and sit down and be like, what? You know, because you go so deep into lives of main characters, side characters, and history, actually, not just film history, but giving the context of those times. So I think it's great.
Thank you. That's very kind. So in fact, you know, probably to relate to your students, the shows to me are like, one is like a lesson that I'm really good at, but it's very hard. And one is like something I, you know, it doesn't matter whether I do well or not, but I just have fun while I'm in there. That's kind of the best analogy, I guess. I like writing life stories, and I like the whole process of creating a sound in like sound effects and putting music and scoring things. I really like all that. But you do get to the end of them and you just kind of flop down on the floor and you're like, oh, jeez. Like the last one, I think it took 2 weeks to record it, just recording it. And then it was 2 months to edit the first edit, and then 2 months to do the second edit, which is where I put everything in. So, you know, and it was day and night, day and night. So when I got to the end, I don't want to think about Cary Grant for a little while.
Yes. I think I'd said this before. It's kind of like you write your paper and maybe you worked really hard on it, but you're just, you want to turn it in and you're done. Yeah. You know, that's it. Like, you never want to think about it. Yeah. So I guess that could be a good and a bad when you're writing about something you love. Cause I know Cary Grant's one of your faves. So you're probably just you need some space, Cary.
It's interesting with Cary Grant, really, as well, because he's one of those people that I love seeing in films. And but I don't know much about. I know the broad strokes. I knew the broad strokes about him, but because when he was in films, he was so private and so secretive, and didn't court celebrity life at all, unlike many of his contemporaries. And I thought it would be really interesting to learn about him and tell his story at the same time. So when I did, I was like, "Whoa! There's so much to Cary Grant." Mainly all in his private life, and I'm finding the relationship with his daughter just absolutely fascinating. And the way it sort of, it was like the ideal version of what his childhood should have been. You know, it's like a mirror image. He had an incredible life, and I don't just mean in Hollywood. I think the really interesting stuff happened before and after Hollywood, which is why I'm not really dwelling too much on the films. Everyone knows the films, and there's no scandal or anything behind, you know, when he was in Bring Up Baby, did he have an affair with Rory? He wasn't like that at all. So all of the films themselves, just I think with this series more than any other, it's been more like, this is kind of not engaging me, the film bit. It's more about what was happening with his wife at the time, or what was happening with his mother, or, you know, him bringing up his daughter. So, yeah, I'm glad I made the series. It's an incredibly big undertaking because there's a lot to go yet, but I'm glad I did it because, yeah, he was just someone I didn't really know about.
I'm really excited, actually, about Queens of Cinema. I think that's your next project, if I'm not mistaken, and you're releasing some of those, because we talk a lot about women in cinema, absence of women in cinema, or the types of roles they have. We talk a lot about gender roles in our group. So I'm looking at your list and I'm like, oh my gosh, can't wait.
That's an interesting one. I wanted to do some kind of series for, it wasn't about the stars in the films, you know, like I've done Jean Harlow, but it wasn't really, you know, about her film career. It's more about, you know, what tragically short life she had. But yeah, it's been really interesting. I just finished Anita Loos, and I did Anime Wong.
Love that.
Lotte Reiniger from the first, like, you know, animation pioneer. So it's been great to do that, because those are kinds of stories that I don't really get to touch on, you know, because I'm golden age of Hollywood. By the time Cary Grant gets to, you know, Hollywood, it's 1932. So the silent days are kind of over, and I don't really get to talk about the pioneering women that were there 10 years previously. It's a really interesting series to make.
I mean, I love that you do that. I think that you do cover some of the big names, but sometimes in a unique approach, you're focusing on things that maybe other people aren't focusing on. You're really going into deeper issues or struggles or people who help them along the way. But I think with something like this, it's just really how many, you know, male identifying podcasters are devoting this many hours to do these kind of things. I think that's really lovely. And I think that's one of the reasons you appeal to so many listeners, is that you do have such a variety of content. Maybe you just have a variety of interests too, but you are including sometimes people who are excluded. And I think that's another reason why you're my favorite. I'm just like, yes, nobody talks about that person. So, like I had mentioned earlier about like Dorothy Common Gore and those characters, even in gigantic number one film of all time, there's no nod there. So to me, that meant a lot. So I'm never disappointed. Attaboy Clarence will crack you up. And it is really wonderful also to get that old time radio in there. It's really fun. It's like having a buddy to cheer you up. Even when you're doing a horror film, there's always enough jokes and really cool music. That's something I am not well versed with, you know, the sound effects and the songs. They always seem to to match. And I'm sure you spend quite a bit of time, even on the shorter podcast, Attaboy Clarence, Secret History of Hollywood. You probably dream that series because it's so much of your life, but they both are stellar. I feel like particularly with Secret History of Hollywood, a podcast is not sufficient in describing what that is. I don't know. You've created a audio film. I don't know. Like that, there's nothing. I don't know how
it's
to.
It's very weird. Yeah. It's come up a lot, actually. You know, people say, how do you feel about those being called a podcast? And I always think to myself, it's very, like, people say I'm a podcaster, but it's like saying an engineer is a hammer carrier. You know, it's almost like that's just the method of delivery. It's very strange. Like, I consider what I do more right. I'm more of a writer than anything else. I'm always writing something.
Yeah.
The whole delivery method is very odd. But when it comes to Secret History of Hollywood, though, people are, you know, I think they describe them as audiobooks with effects or biopics that you can listen to instead of watch. So, yeah, but I have to be honest with you. I mean, you are a huge radio fan, all-time radio fan. That series would not exist if it wasn't for all-time radio, because I can't tell you how many times I've heard or felt a certain way while I've listened to an episode of Suspense or something and gone, how did they manage to make me feel like that? And when you tap back into it, you can hear the music coming up 5 minutes before and very subtle. And then there's an effect that startles you or something. And it's all in the voice. So when it came to making Secret History of Hollywood, it was just a natural progression. I was listening to so much old time radio that when I started piecing them together, like a painting, it was like, oh, I know what goes here. I know that I need some kind of amusing music here to underpin the scene, because then people will know that they're supposed to be happy about it. Or, you know, I need something sinister under here, so people will know something dark is better. So yeah, old time radio. Thank them, not me. I love.
All of them. Now, they're not all great, and some of them are unbelievable, of course, but for risk of spending 3 hours picking your brain and nerding out about this, I did have this on the list. So in that vein, OTR, Old Time Radio, is a big part of Attaboy Clarence. Well, how did you discover these, and what are your favorites?
Old Time Radio, God, I think I was 17 or 18 years old, and I was in a supermarket. It was the days of cassette tapes, and I was walking through the supermarket looking for a new album to buy, and I saw this really strange tape box, and it had a picture of Joan Crawford on the front of it. I didn't know who she was at the time, and it said Suspense Classic Chills, and I was like, ooh, that might be a nice change instead of, you know, some music. So I bought this thing. I think it was £3, and it was Three Lethal Words with Joan Crawford. I remember it. It had The Wages of Sin with Barbara Stanwyck. And then there was a Charles Boyer one called Another Man's Poison, I think it was. And then there was When the Bower Breaks with Rosalind Russell. And it was on, you know, one episode on each side of these tapes. And I listened to them and I was like, these are incredible. I used to listen to them every night. And I wore the tapes out. So I went back to the supermarket and found Bold Venture. I found The Screen Director's Playhouse. And I just fell in love with it. I was like, I need to get more of these. But you couldn't get them. Like this is before the internet, so I just had to like keep my eyes out for tapes. I got quite a few, and then suddenly the internet came, and they were just all there. And I remember the day I found all of the Bold Ventures and had them burned to a CD by my friend was probably the greatest day of my life. I remember going out and actually celebrating. It's like, oh, I've got 58 episodes, Bold Venture. Yeah, but Suspense is the best, I think. I mean, in terms of quality, it's just so entertaining. Even things like you don't think you're going to like Western set ones. They always turn out to be incredible. I really like The Whistler.
Yeah.
Have you heard The Whistler? I haven't
heard all of them, but I have heard some amazing ones. That's probably one I need to listen to more of, but Suspense for sure. I agree. I think the writing or the story kind of
production quality is always top notch, isn't it?
It's stellar. And it lasts. I'm still freaked out by those. Yeah, some of those are pretty intense. and I think there's some series where maybe the whole series isn't my jam, but you've covered one that was horrifying that alone would definitely be in my top 10 of, would you like to have nightmares tonight? Listen to this in a dark room. And you're really good at picking out the best of, I'm trying to remember, it definitely wasn't suspense, but there were some that were in, maybe it was Quiet Please or something that I was like, okay, I'm going to have to take a lap, you know, quiet my brain.
Yeah, yeah. Quiet Please and Lights Out are fantastic and absolutely groundbreaking in terms of storytelling. I mean, they're freaky to listen to today. You wonder how they got away with them. Yeah, The Whistler's great, and there are like 1200 episodes of The Whistler, and they're all really good. Suspense is the best because it had all the stars. It was almost like listening to fantasy football casting of old Hollywood. It was like, let's put James Cagney in a thriller about a man who murders someone accidentally with a car. Let's put Cary Grant in The Black Curtain. Let's put, you know, God, just the list was endless. Joan Crawford appearances are brilliant, and you recommended the 10 years last time I spoke to you, and I went away and listened to it straight away, and God, it's blood curdling stuff.
It is. I think we need to do a release in October, 10 things to freak you out.
Absolutely.
Go listen to these, and people will be like, what's an OTR? And we'll be like, glad you asked. You're gonna listen to my oration on why
you won't be glad you asked.
I know. We'll pretend you are. But for me, also on the theater side of things, I would say Academy Award Theater, Lux Theater, which I know you played a lot of, but also I got really into Mercury Theater and Campbell's Playhouse with Orson Welles, which to me, controversial opinion or maybe not, I think that was his best medium because his voice is so booming, but really struggled in other art forms of creating what apparently was in his brain. But when we talked about Citizen Kane, we talked a little bit about that when we screened that. I think there's so much to explore. It's an art form, you know, pre-television, I think, is just an interesting time in the US. Was there more dialogue? It was also the economics of it all. A lot more people had a radio or could afford a radio at the time. And it was very literary. A lot of these are literary adaptations. You're missing out if you haven't at least tried to venture into
it. Everything there as well. It's like you can say I want romance and you've got like 2 years worth of entertainment there. If you want horror, the same. If you want to hear, you know, adaptations of these movies that have stood the test of time, there are, you know, three or four adaptations of each movie with different stars. It's incredible. And this whole universe of entertainment is just there for free for everyone. I forget The Halls of Ivy with Ronald Coleman. I've listened to that whole series probably 10 times. I can't get enough of it. And The Great Gildersleeve, which I really love. Yeah.
Halls of Ivy, I think he's an academic or a professor. Great Gildersleeve is, that's like slapstick kind of, right? Like
sort of, yeah. It's like a sitcom about a family. It's a young boy and his sister and their uncle, who's the Great Gildersleeve, comes to look after them basically because I don't even know what happens to their parents, and they have a nanny, and it's some of it's quite twee, and you know, he falls in love and there's a whole series long arc where he's, you know, this divorcee is trying to woo him and things, and then, you know, he gets into various scrapes and it's all about the small town people, and it sounds terrible when I'm describing it to you, but
it sounds like Uncle Knows Best or something.
Yeah. It's so gentle, and so it's like a really rose-tinted view of a little town. Everyone's polite, you know, they have, there's lots of community things. You listen to it and you're going, I wish I lived there.
I know. I think a little bit of escapism is definitely a theme in these classic films and radio shows. Maybe we need a escape from modern times now and then. I mean, you can't live there in your, you know, that alternate reality, unfortunately, or fortunately, but I don't think that's a bad thing. It's good to have a variety. Like, I watch so many film noirs and I need to watch something totally just like candy or just simple or screwballs, or like, I remember I watched Midnight with Claudette Colbert and I was okay, you know, the gold digger who does the right thing. It's lighthearted. You just feel good.
It's like someone stroking your heart back to life, isn't it? When at the end of the day, when you're like so trodden down, or you know, you're beaten down and you're worried about what's coming tomorrow, it's almost like you go, right, I'm not going to think about any of that. I'm going to listen to 4 episodes of The Great Gildersleeve while I'm out for a walk. And then I'm going to come home and watch Midnight with Claudette Colbert. And you just feel great afterwards. Yeah. It's like, It's like tonic water for your soul. It's great. I love it.
I think that's good. You're right. That is what revived my cold, dead heart. So you caught me on that.
I can't believe your heart was ever cold or dead.
No, it definitely, when you're so intense and some heavy duty stuff, even stuff with the blacklist, I'm fascinated and I'm always reading about it, but I'm also a break from people destroying other people's lives through propaganda. And you watch something like that or somebody that makes you laugh. And all that time radio also inspired some TV shows too. Like My Favorite Husband became I Love Lucy. So I think that it's a part of history as well. We see through our art what we prioritize or what we like, and what's not being said is a big thing we also talk about with students. Like, what if this person was in this movie or in this play or whatever? So I think that's really fun. Yeah, I could talk to you about this all day. I'm making notes of homework, but it is so fascinating to me that you encountered this medium at 17. Like, I think you were a pretty cool teenager, Adam.
Oh, thank you. So do I. And so does anyone who's listening. Yeah. When you go out with girls and stuff, well, no, I was too busy listening to Bold Venture. Free Bogart.
Made you super cool later, right? Like, that's all that matters. You were developing your own, like, persona. Okay, let
me ask you a question. What's your most listened to episode of All Time Radio ever?
Oh my god!
The one you return to over and over.
That's hard. Oh, you really put me on the spot while we're recording. I listen to yours a lot. Like, I go back and listen to particularly Attaboy Clarence, because it's like, okay, yeah, I want to hear the one about Claudette Colbert, or I want to hear about this one. There's just some funny ones. You know, I'm a Rosalind Russell fan, so My Sister Eileen kind of makes me happy because I like that movie. Have you read that one?
No.
Oh, that story is kind of about resilience. It's two sisters that are very different. The really pretty one, and then Rosalind Russell, who's beautiful, but she's not
beautiful.
I know, but she's not Janet Blair, and she's taking care of both of them. It's such a great story, and it really reads well today. So I know that's one of the ones I've downloaded. Gosh, I really just try to go to a bunch. I try not to listen to really heavy hard stuff before bed. I don't think that's your problem. Do you have a favorite that go-to that you're just on loop?
Episode-wise, I would say, I think my favorite suspense episode is Customers Like Murder with Roland Young. I've heard that probably 100 times. That's the one I played on the very first episode of Iceberg Counts because I just loved it. I'll tell you what, though. I think the one I listened to most, I used to listen to it every single night, was The Prisoner of Zender. From the Screen Director's Playhouse with Ronald Corman and Benita Hume in it. And it was, I know it so well that I can literally like recite it alongside the thing now. I wrote suddenly a large ruddy faced man was kind of, but I used to actually freak my girlfriends sometimes by
just talking the voices.
Just going, do you mind if I listen to something while I fall asleep? And I go, okay. So I would put The Prisoner of Zender with Ronald Corman on. And they would just frown from their side of the bed.
They were like, yeah, I got this thing that I...
Yeah, yeah.
I'll come back and forth.
Oh, no. I've got an appointment at 1:30 in the morning. Goodbye.
You know, we're joking about how cool you are, you know, but I think that's... I think you're cool. I think we would be friends. We'd be like, what is an instant message? Like, have you heard about this one?
Absolutely. Send each I think there's going to be a lot of that.
For sure. I hope so, to bring it back to your podcast. I think that 17-year-old Adam, you started with suspense, and that was your gateway into so many other things. But you've said, which I think is really important for other people to hear too, is you listened and you learned. You were like, this is the best. So what is it? What is it that makes it the best? It's almost like you went back and reverse engineered. I don't know. And I think that's really interesting because there's things they could teach you in school, but also sometimes modeling or sometimes seeing what's great, you really think of what makes this great or what makes it great to you. And it's like you've been in sort of a crash course since your teens.
It's like I learned about sound through osmosis. It's very odd because I knew nothing about editing. I knew nothing about, you know, how to use Adobe Audition or what kind of microphone to use or anything like that. All I knew was that I knew the way I wanted it to sound. So as you say, yeah, it's like I was like, well, I know how I want it to sound because I've heard that kind of effect on suspense, or that I've had that kind of emotional response to this piece of old time radio. So it was just a case of going, right, I need to try and dream up how they did that. But they were absolute pioneers. I mean, people like very kind people like yourself are saying to me now, you know, you make these amazing podcast things, and how did you, you know, why, how would you categorize and whatever like that? And really, all I'm doing is picking up the mantle of old time radio producers. It's a very, very old art form that's been sadly forgotten. I know there are radio productions and adaptations, but no one's really, I don't know. I think it's become a bit too slick.
You're also very modest because like you definitely are inspired by it, but you put in the work and made it your own too. So you have this extra certification. If we were talking about it, if something they don't even teach you that I know of in school or not very deeply, I really like a variety of the art form. And the fact that you are built to have that reaction, that it could affect you that much, I think not seeing, you know, is some part of it. I'm sure your listeners, especially when you're going down that journey or mood of secret history, almost like we're living through it. And good for you for being your own little fellow and like
my own little old-time radio producer.
17. And that's what I love about youth. They're trying to find their identity, and identifying and identification is so much of really what you're drawn to anyway. So you're either going to go watch something because you're like, this is not my comfort zone, or you're going to be like, this spoke to me. Okay. So I have to ask you a little silly question. And this is like something I know that we are in I'm not going to pretend like there's not a pandemic. There is a pandemic. So this is kind of the parameters here. If you could safely screen any classic film in a large theater, I mean, it could be anywhere in the world. So you can, you know, let me know what that is. Reserved just for you. Yes. A party like Adam's movie night. And it was in person. You had all of the most beautiful equipment and everything. And you could invite people in one night only. Everybody gets a plane ticket, wherever you do it. Mm-hmm. What do you think you would want to show to people?
Goodness me. I don't know if I could think of one specific film, but I think I would probably pick something pre-code because it's so removed from what people imagine classic Hollywood to be. So I would just love to see the reaction of an audience watching something like Three on a Match or Babyface, one of those two probably. I would just love to see if they would gasp, but I'm sure they would as well, because they'd go, oh, it's an old film. And then all of a sudden, you know, and Vorex, face planting from the top floor of an apartment building, high on cocaine, she's like, you know, left her child to starve, and then you've got Barbara Stanwyck sleeping with a building full of men. I just think something like a really shocking pre-code would be great fun to watch with modern lords. Or actually, I'll tell you what, I would love to see an Affair to Remember. Oh, thank you. I'd love to see an Affair to Remember on a big screen. Like I've seen it on a big TV, but that film is just so ravishing.
Now, which adaptation? Because I think that's been made two times officially, and the third one, Love Affair, is the version of that too. So maybe.
Yeah, I really love the Charles Boyer and Irene Dunne version. I love it. But my first love was Cary Grant and Deborah Carr. And I love the scene with the grandmother where it's such a quiet, nothing scene. But it's so poignant and beautiful, and you know, you got Capri in the background, the ship, you know, ship funnel thing in the background. It's just so lovely, and it's so colourful, and so heartbreaking. But then when he goes back later on, and she has died, that scene is just like, oh my god! People think Cary Grant was just like a handsome guy who did fun stuff in movies. They don't really give him enough credit for being an amazing actor, but that scene where he's just walking from the piano, he's walking around the room and he's remembering, you can hear the piano music from the first time around in the background, and he just kind of puts his hand on the piano and he closes his eyes and he has this moment where he just kind of sort of sways slightly, and you can just see his heart, like his last heartstring, just go twang, you know. It's really, really moving scene.
I think it's awesome you picked two very different movies. Part of my reason for asking you was, would you pick something that is a crowd pleaser? Because I know A Wonderful Life, despite the fact that we watched it on loop every year, is one of your favorites, but it's also a favorite within itself and would be a crowd pleaser. The Precode in particular is so fascinating because you're really thinking about like engaging the audience and their reaction.
Thank you. I think if an audience was into it, as long as they weren't sat there on their phones and chatting and stuff like that, I think if you give me an engaged audience, I would love to watch Three on a Match with people who are really watching it, or Babyface. I think it'd be great choices.
I think that's interesting. When we showed our last film, I was just listening and with glee to like the gasps. Oh, and Too Late for Tears or some of the film noirs, because something shocking always happens. You know, it's something's going to go down if Gloria Graham is in a movie. I'm just going to say it is true. Not going to be a light watch, but because we also showed Studies here.
did you? Oh my goodness, me. Have you seen The Silver Cord?
No. John McCray and I'm not going to lie. Your advertisement for it makes me intrigued, but also horrified.
That Silver Cord is crazy. We watched it the first film festival last year, and that got the biggest response. People couldn't believe that it was an old movie. They were like, how? Why? This is totally like, it just made me realize that old cinema is quite dangerous, actually. Yeah. It's crazy.
That's the danger of nostalgia too. People pretend like there wasn't anything kind of salacious or problematic. I mean, anything made by humans, any art, there's going to be something where you're just like, or ugh. You know? I mean, I think that's the fun of it. You may have spoken about this too. It's like when you pick your films that you want to talk about, I am unapologetically going to pick films worthy of dialogue and hopefully enjoyable enough. Then if the students or participants want to talk about something else, I've done some research. Like I try to prepare, I try to put the work in. So I'm not really going to feature a bunch of people who made the blacklist happen. I don't want to waste my limited time.
Because you're making a body of work, aren't you? And why would you want to include things that don't deserve to be there? I think all the films I choose for Edward Clarence fall into three categories. They're films I think are great and people should watch. Films that they probably won't like, but I really love for some reason, like The Brighton Strangler, or films that are surprisingly bad. That's the third one. It's like, I wouldn't ever talk about a film that bored me unless it was a film that starred amazing people, made by amazing people. Then the fact that it bored me becomes a talking point. You know? Can you believe? Like Christmas Eve, I watched Christmas Eve, 1947. Have you seen that film? It's got George Raft, Joan Blondell, Dennis Hoy, Anne Harding, Randolph Scott, George Brent. It's absolutely packed to the rafters with people. It's like a big, big film. The most boring film I've ever seen. And so I reviewed it on the Patreon bonus show last week, because I'm, you know, it's a bad film, but it's remarkable because it's bad. It's like you watch it and go, why isn't this good? It's like, really, you spent all this money on getting all these people and they're acting their socks off, and it's such a bad story. It's really bad, really boring, really badly edited, badly made. It's a terrible, terrible film.
Well, think about holiday movies now. We'll make a Christmas movie. Someone will watch it.
Yeah.
It'll go straight to video. So maybe you don't have to try once you get the theme of Christmas and you throw in those amazing actors. And alternatively, we've talked about like Christmas in Connecticut and Remember the Night, these kind of movies that have a little bit of a message. And have characters maybe playing different types of characters. You know, representation is just such an important part too. And we talked about Ricardo Montalban in Mystery Street. It's also an outlier because he's a competent police detective. He happens to be, you know, Hispanic, and that's not mentioned ever, but he just is.
The only, I literally watched that 2 weeks ago. The only kickback he gets about it at all is from the villain, isn't it? He makes some comment when he's being interviewed about, you know, why am I being interviewed by someone like you or something.
Yeah.
And it's almost like the filmmakers were saying only crap guys would do this to someone. So it's like you say, it's really good. It's a really well represented film because it's not mentioned by anyone else, is it? And he's super smart and he's super charming, and you come away from the film thinking, wow, great character.
And I think that's rare. The person who's ultimately in charge has the ability to be like, no, I'm not going to work with that, or who are they? And it takes that sort of advocacy or putting yourself on the line and being like, this person's just as competent as the next person. It's not that your ethnicity is erased or you're colorblind, but it is not the central focus. And I think that's another type of story that we don't see very much. And so when I watched that, I was like, there's really few people making fun of him. Like, he just comes in and gets it done. So to me, that in a noir, that was something. That's kind of a big thing to me, the casting. And I know even people who are casting had limited power there, but it's fun to see when beyond the odds, some of these characters show up and they just are themselves, or they are there to tell the story, not be the focus of a social problem. But anyways, side note, not quite it. definitely want to ask you, because you have so many different projects, and even searching around, I'm sure I've missed a million things that you do. I feel like you are a multimedia creative artist. So in addition to the podcast entries you have online, you provide bonus content for patrons, like monthly virtual film meetings and additional content. You've also been a consultant and probably much more. Again, I'm not your agent. Just these are things I've been able to find out about you. Now, big question. So your original Secret History of Hollywood Val Lewton series, Shadows, is being adapted to a film. I've never heard of a podcast or audiobook being adapted to a film. So if there are others, that's a surprise to me, but this is pretty amazing. So can you tell us a little bit about how that happened, where it's going, and without divulging too many details, what might be next with that project?
Well, it sounds like a recent thing. The podcast was actually optioned in 2018 by Eli Roth, and he wanted to make a TV series of the Bullets and Blood series, but it never really kind of worked out. He was super busy, and I think he just optioned it at the wrong time, to be honest. But I went to meet him in London. He was ever so nice, and we were talking about the Audrey Hepburn series and the potential for that and everything, and the option just kind of ran out. Couldn't really work out what they wanted to do. And I remember thinking to myself at the time, oh, well, that's that over then. But then my agent called and she said, we've had loads more offers in the meantime, so which one do you want? I was like, what? And she said, yeah. So she said, this sounds like the best one. And it was Brad Fischer, who is the head of New Republic Pictures. And he's been at the helm of, you know, produced tons and tons of them, Zodiac and Shutter Island and Avatar and everything. And he and Lita Kalogridis, who wrote Shutter Island, and she's now doing the new Cleopatra movie. Yeah, so I spoke to them. They're both passionate Lewton fans, and I've been looking for a long time, I think, for a way of getting his story to the screen. So when they heard my series, they were kind of like, I think they heard it through Eli Roth. When they heard the series, they were like, this is the one, this is the thing. So yeah, I'm gonna executive produce the film. I'm the creative consultant for the film, and I'm co-writing the film with Lita. So we're currently in the scripting stages. There are some very exciting conversations happening, but they didn't just option Shadows, they've optioned the whole lot. So I think there are plans for Bullets and Blood. There are plans for the Death on Alvarado Street, I made, which is a patron-only bonus show about William Desmond Taylor. There are plans for that as well. Nothing I can really sort of expand upon, not because I'm trying to be secretive, but more because there aren't any plans set in stone yet, so it would be silly too. But Lita and I are writing the film, and Brad's producing with Lita, and it's very exciting, and they're super nice people. Like, everyone tells you that Hollywood art, they were only out to rip you off and stuff. No, they're absolutely lovely people. Brad's all over the world, and he's always, you know, on location and stuff, but he always takes the time to call in. He was in Malta a little while ago making the new film, The Voyage, Last Voyage of the Demeter, which is like the new vampire film. Yes, anyway, so they're incredibly interesting people, and they're super, super big Luton fans, and it's very exciting. But yeah, it's crazy because you sound like a multimedia artist or something, creator or something. I was a delivery driver in 2014, and I just thought to myself, I'm going to make a podcast and see what happens. And so I did, and I got better at it, and I got a bit more ambitious with it. And now I got flown to Vancouver last year to be in a documentary about Alfred Hitchcock, which was just insane. And it came out actually a couple of months ago. And the funny thing is, Steven Spielberg's in this, Edgar Wright, John Landis, Eli Roth's in it, I'm in it. And because of the way the credits are listed, it's alphabetical. So at the top of the credits, you've got featuring Adam Roach, Eli Roth, blah, 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 blah.
I love
And I looked
that.
At it now. It's sacrilege. These poor people that gave their time. It's called I Am Alfred Hitchcock. And it was really fun to make. And like I say, you know, who'd have thought I was a delivery driver, and suddenly they're flying me to Vancouver, sitting me down in front of a camera for 6 hours. We made it just before the pandemic hit. And I think there were plans to, like, have all the contributors be on camera. I was on camera, and they had a couple of other guys on camera, but because of the pandemic, suddenly travel had to shut down. So all the other contributors, like Eli Roth and you know, Edgar Wright, they couldn't fly over. So what they've done is they've taken all of the audio and instead just made the whole thing clips, but, you know, with us sort of talking over it and telling you what was going on. But I thought I was going to be in it for about 2 minutes. I'm literally the whole thing. It's like every time someone finishes talking, it's me again, and then, you know, Steven Spielberg will pop up, and then it's me again. So I was watching it going, wow, it's like I thought I'd done a really bad job. I remember walking out there and calling my agent going, don't ever ever let me do one of these on camera things again. It was the most hideous, awkward, embarrassing thing ever. But they must have thought it was fine. So it's all good. But yeah, now I'm producing a movie and writing a movie, and I'm making podcasts for a living and writing for a living, which is something I always wanted to do, and being in documentaries and stuff. It's great. I can't tell you how it's happened because I don't quite know.
I feel like I'm going to answer that. But, I mean, having barely met you, but hearing your story, it happened because you're extremely talented and you're very authentic and true to your vision. And I think it's your work ethic. I've seen other people who are fellow followers or patrons of your show that are just super happy it happened to a nice person who just worked hard. And also in a sometimes frightening world, hearing those stories of just get better at it. Don't pretend you know everything, and don't pretend that you haven't learned. Build upon what you learn. And I think with you just being, you know, a teenager starting out and saying, wow, this is something amazing and I want to be a part of this, it's inspiring. And I think that's really good for people to hear. Sometimes you hear stories, people are just really good at something. Maybe they don't know how to navigate branding or a web presence. And you got better because you cared to get better. And you used your resources. You read. I'm telling you, Adam reads. Everybody read. Read them while you got them, because it's a scary time. Read them while you got them. And you do your research. You're not halfway doing it. I mean, you're a historian, I would say, in a way, too. Historian, writer, but I'm sure, you know, you've been on camera, so you might be a triple threat. I'm gonna see you acting the next one.
No, never again. I'll do it by voice. I'm an introvert. It was a slightly awkward.
You know, so that one of our student groups, they're future directors, they do promos. They did a promo for Reel to Reel. and I did a little an appearance in it, and I was just like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, I'm the worst part of this. But I was like, tell me what to do. And my part aside, it is one of the most creative things just because it was their vision. And I think that you also have your own vision. And I mean, maybe you don't want to have the FaceTime, but you are a director, I would say, in a way too, because you're directing where the story goes. And you've had people come in and do guest voices. Mark Gatiss, I think, is a big name that you've had.
Bless his heart. He's the one actually told me to do Val Lewton. Yeah, he found the podcast through I don't even know, actually. I must ask him, but he said, you know, he tweeted something about, you know, I've just listened to the Sherlock Holmes podcast, and so I tweeted him back. I was like, oh, I absolutely love you. I've been such a fan of him for years. Like, I remember years ago when I first started podcasting, someone interviewed me and said, who would you like to meet most in the world? And I was like, oh, Mark Gatiss. Every time I hear him on the radio, he's always talking about something that I love. So I just think we get on really well, and we do. He's such a nice guy. But yeah, I don't think I would have met anyone else on Secret History of Hollywood. Someone else worked with Mark because he was like reading a fairy story at the beginning. So, you know, it wouldn't matter. But.
Yeah, I can see you have a standard.
It's more like if someone does a great job, and then I come in and like ruin it by getting an inflection wrong or an accent wrong or something, I wouldn't want them to go, I see I was great, but you.
No,
I think it's best I just do all the embarrassing jobs.
No, you do the American accent. You do like all these accents. Oh. It's just so fun. I mean, you make yourself vulnerable there, but it's kind of like necessary when you're, oh, that person said this. If you was just the Adam voice, you would be like, who's on first? What's going on? So I think it works out really well. It's harder to find some of the consulting you've done with BBC. I've looked for some of the shows, but they were taken off. Like on the radio shows, I guess they don't keep those up.
There was one. Yeah, they don't. But there was one actually broadcast The Weekend Just Gone, which is up there now, I think, for the next month. It's called The Lives of Harry Towers. I presented that one on BBC Radio. That was good fun to make. It's very odd. Like, I thought I was going to go in and, you know, it was going to be BBC recording booth and all that kind of thing. And all we did was we went into an office and sat down, and he got this little mic, and they go on the desk. I was like, oh, I thought it'd be like a sound room or something. But you know, at the BBC, they do it all day long. You know, they don't need, they'd have queues of people outside the sound booth waiting to go and do their part. So, of course, they don't do it in the booth.
I could talk to you forever, and you don't deserve that. have a life, but it's selfishly, it's been wonderful. A big collaborator for us. I want to give them a shout out. Delta Kappa Alpha, which is started as a fraternity, but now it's co-ed. It's a professional cinematic honor society at University of North Texas. And many of the films we pick are from alum from the USC chapter in California, which would include Hitchcock and Lucille Ball, Jimmy Stewart, Paul Newman, all of these people who are somehow inducted as notable members. So we work with a lot of students, and really it's brought all the joy for me of doing these film clubs, but we really get to engage with this content and unpack it, enjoy it, you know, not ruin it, but still do a lot of the what ifs. Because of these students wanting to enter various media arts careers, could be podcasting, directing, a lot of horror fans, which is not something I can talk about a lot. Although I will tell you, in the last month, several people have said we need to talk about cat people. Yes. I may have to invite you back or touch.
No worries. Yeah. That's
okay. Because I will definitely refer them to the shadows. But, you know, there's an excitement. There's a little concerned with the way of the world right now, too. Mm-hmm. And I believe you have such an interesting model. So you have this Patreon site, you don't have commercials within your podcast, that would make it probably much easier for you. But of course, it is a disruption for the listener. So I assume that, I don't know for sure, I guess that's a big part of it. So you have this model that you've built with the Patreon, where they could get the bonus content. I mean, you are very prolific on your free site and all of this stuff. Thinking about what you've learned, where you are today, do you have advice, particularly for students or people who are new to podcasting or other creative ventures, of which you have many in sort of the media arts field, that you would want to share, kind of looking back and looking forward?
I would say if you have a passion about something, then the world is becoming a place where it's so easy now to take that passion and turn it into a living. I mean, I was arguably in a cul-de-sac when I began this. You know, I was a married father of three in a job that I was quite happy to just do until I retired, because it meant I got to spend time with my children. And suddenly I just decided one day to do a complete 180 and try something new. And because I was so passionate about old movies, as you know, I sort of discovered them very young, and old time radio, it was a pleasure to do it. So every time a new technological advancement came along, like podcasting or methods of delivery or ways of meeting people or social media, it just becomes that little bit easier to take your passion and tell the world about it. And eventually, I mean, the world is a really exciting place when it comes to you know, people being able to follow the life they want. So I don't have any specific advice. I think it would be trite of me to say, make sure your sound quality is good or make sure your scripts are good, because I think, you know, who am I to judge on people's scripts or sound quality? But I would say that if you're passionate about something, explore every avenue until you find a way and say, well, there's a very slim chance that if I went down this, I may one day end up making a living. If you're passionate about your subject, then you will follow it to the end, like I did. It took me 4 years to go from a beginner to, oh my God, this is suddenly my job. I'll never forget. I was a chef at the time, and I said, I'm earning enough money through Patreon to be able to not work here anymore. So I handed my job in. It was 4 years. It was 3 years ago today, actually, that I finished my job, and I walked out, and it was the greatest feeling in the world. And that's because I just took a chance one day. So, you know, it doesn't matter if people tell you no, or if you get stuck in a lane. It doesn't matter if you decide to do it in 10 or 15 years or 20 years, like I did. So, yeah, it's entirely possible to follow your passion and make a living from it. Just be the best you can and just keep going forward.
I think that's great advice. And I think maybe you set your timing too. You made sure it was the right time. You had your other position and you were like, this is okay. This is the time that I can make this move. But in the meantime, you're getting better. You're creating more content. You are so engaged with your audience. I really think we all operate on a 24-hour day, but I don't think you do, because I just see passively how much you're always thanking people for thank yous and you're creating all this content. I think you have a very loyal fan base. And for any naysayers, send them to us. I mean, you reach a lot of people, but it's also vulnerable putting your art out there in any way. And so if people find your content, I've noticed also, they're not just like, hey, this is cool. They're like, oh my gosh, you need to listen to this.
I know, bless their heart.
And I think it's because it's unique. It's uniquely your own, but you have pulled from those masters of the beginning of radio and everything. And I think that your work shows, and it is so exciting to have a happily ever after to see that somebody works that hard and is so gracious and so engaged with the people that follow along with that journey is getting a little, maybe not the full spotlight, it's coming your way, but like you got some of that shine and it makes us happy, I think. And
thank you, Lily. That's so kind.
No, I mean, I'm gushing. Again, it has meant a lot to me to hear your stories, the people you cover that other people aren't covering, but also just the joy. You do a lot of service through that. So I want to thank you so much for this time. I could just talk to you forever.
Thank you.
And
it's been such a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And I hope people We'll definitely listen to more. So what I have here is that your secret history of Hollywood is described as an ongoing series of specially produced histories, bringing life to the stories and secrets that shaped cinema. And on Twitter, that's at Movie Histories. You also have an official website, attaboyclarence.com. And on Twitter, that's at attaboyc. Should have had your lovely voice say all this. But in addition to all of the things you have online that people can see and your share outs through social media, if you want bonus content and to really support Adam, who 100% endorse and deserves it, and get all of the wonderful bonus stuff, which things are popping up that I didn't even know you did, like trivia and things like that. So many wonderful things. Patreon.com/AttaboySecret, combining those two together. Anyways, I'm looking forward to hearing or seeing, if you do make it back to the big screen again, what you have in store. And yeah, that's all I want to say. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Lily. What a pleasure to meet you.
Pleasure to meet you.